right, so as I said, my name is Mandy. I am the manager of Girl Leadership Experience, Midland Camps, and STEAM Initiatives. I have the longest title in our organization, and I'm very proud of it. And I work for the Girl Scouts of South Carolina Mountains to Midlands. And I wanted to talk today about shifting the paradigm, so rethinking our K-12 education and outreach with nonprofit partners. So I'm specifically referring to the Girl Scouts, though this message can be translated over to other organizations that you want to work with. At this point in my life, Girl Scouts is the greatest, but I don't care if you're working with Boy Scouts, Campfire Girls, American Heritage Girls, whatever else is out there. It doesn't bother me. So this is something we all know. We all know our statistics. We are struggling to find people to come into these STEM fields, except for the ones that actually don't need people in them. They have tons of people in them. But specifically our agricultural industry, we just really need more workers. There's a huge gap in the amount of available labor and the people coming in. And a lot of the people coming in are foreign born, which isn't a big deal, but the people that we are coming in our country still isn't very diverse, and there still aren't a lot of women involved. So we know these are our issues. So you have to ask yourself, why is that? Where are all of the students? College attendance is almost at record highs. There are a ton of people coming to school. Why are these programs not popular? Why are they shutting down? Well, part of that is our double-edged sword of success. As agronomists and soil scientists, we did a fantastic job solving world hunger. We got a whole bunch of people off the farm, into the service economies. Everything was great. And then the people who lived in the towns and the service economies kind of forgot we were important. So it's kind of a double-edged sword of success. People also in first world countries, they actually did research about this and said that it was uncool to have degrees in these particular fields because everyone is a farmer. So if you're going to go to college, why not be a doctor or a lawyer or something with prestige? Engineering has prestige. Why not do those things? So this kind of created for us especially a pipeline problem. There aren't a lot of students coming in because we don't have a strong recruitment process, especially when compared to other professional societies. Our current outreach efforts, which are good and commendable, but most of them, and I've said I've been doing it for 10 years with the societies now, focus on curriculum development in the classroom. And I'll get into that later. There's nothing wrong with that. However, there are some problems associated with that. And most of these programs actually reach the people who already know agriculture exists. And they're mainly located within the towns and areas with research universities and stations. So I did my master's at Kansas State University, and that's a picture from their Kids Field Day. Super popular, amazing program, great for the girls, the people in Riley County, but you get a couple counties over and nobody knows anything. There's hardly any extension efforts aside through the 4-H individuals, and we don't really talk to them for some reason. I don't know why that is, but there's a big disconnect. And this is actually a pretty huge failure from science's perspective. We are the superheroes. Everything we do to save the world. We got into this to make sure people we're not hungry anymore. We're going to solve world hunger. We're going to help the environment. We're going to, you know, for me, I was going to be all around there and make sure all the people had clean drinking water. And we are one of the most compelling majors and programs to help people around the world. And I think we're missing out on that advertising opportunity. We can actually be this catalyst for change. But we actually need to change some of the recruitment strategies so we can reach a wider population base. And this is where I think we can tap into some of the mobile programming units through 4-H and Girl Scouts, etc. Because we've been so successful, Most of rural America is actually suffering from economic depression. I know in South Carolina, in the 22 counties I work in, our youth and poverty rate overall is 26%, but in our cities, it's only 18%. You get into our rural counties, it's 33%. And the county that I live in is 48%. 48% of kids live in a family of four that make less than $20,000 a year. It is a depressed rural area, and it's very important that I think that with the scientific knowledge and help, these are fields that we can bring to these rural areas. You can be educated. You don't need to have a four-year degree. You can make a huge difference with a two-year degree or even a good base of knowledge. And you can use that knowledge to start businesses and help completely and totally rebuild some of these rural infrastructures. This is especially true in women and minority populations. They're very vulnerable to this particular kind of trap. In my county, I mentioned the youth and poverty rating is 38%. African Americans and Hispanics, the families, it's actually 70%. Whites, it's, 35, so there's nothing majorly wrong with, discrepancy. There's still a lot of poverty everywhere, but it definitely hits the women and the minorities. Also, in my state, we have 43% of our children live in households with one parent. We're number one in the country where I live. And we're dealing with a lot of single-parent households, so we can really make a difference in this. And these issues are compounded by poverty and lack of quality education. And that's where us scientists can come in. We can come into the rural areas, because our science is a rural science. We can come in and we can make a difference. Now, what's wrong with classroom education? Nothing. We can focus on classroom curricula. That's absolutely fine. However, teachers are overworked, underpaid, and there's very stringent curriculum requirements that they have to attest to. So if you want to work with teachers and in-classroom curricula, you want to work with people who actually develop the teaching training seminars. You can't just call up a classroom and be like, yo, I want to come teach you about soils. Because in this day and age, there are a lot of security concerns about that. I know to get into my schools, I have to be background checked and vetted and have my references and all this stuff completely and total. Like, I have to have my FBI paperwork from my background check to get into schools. So instead of trying to get into schools and teaching in schools, you can actually outsource the work to the nonprofits who are already background checked and ready to go. So our disciplines also aren't taught traditionally. And it's very difficult for a teacher to extrapolate and make that, oh, well, this is, plant science. That's, yeah, so I guess that's sort of biology, but how am I going to put this into my biology curriculum? Because I've already got this huge, full slate of biology activities that they make me do already. There are also some more issues. The younger teachers that you work with, especially K-3, even though I love them, they want formulaic hands-on activities that have the exact same outcome every time. And that is, science is messy. It doesn't happen that way. And unless teachers have that scientific foundation and background, they can't actually extrapolate on the alternatives and explain what went, why did this happen? A lot of them are scared to even try because they don't want to be wrong, even though Google can help them. You also need to take risk, and you need administration buy-in. And in a lot of areas, especially our rural areas, it's the proverbial unicorn. Good luck finding competent and qualified teachers and a supportive administration in a county that's only got 10,000 people. I mean, we had to recruit for teachers for a long time, and a lot of the counties that I work in had to rely on Teach for America to get people, period. So our major solution is to think how we change how we think and partner with nonprofits and informal educators. So like the Girl Scouts, we're groups that I already have an advertising structure in place. I can blast out an email to 10,000 girls and get them aware of my activities, and they know to look for something from me because they trust me. I also have large areas of coverage that I can get to, and I have insurance in case something happens. The liability is not on you, it is on me as a Girl Scout person. So the Girl Scouts will pay for the insurance, and you are essentially a contractor. It allows flexibility and time. You can teach what you want. You don't have to teach to Education Curriculum Standard number 506.8.315 engineering. You can teach whatever you want. Kids actually sign up to come to these programs. They want to be there. And I can tell you it's a refreshing change from working in classrooms, because when I sit and do classroom work, you have about 25% of people who are interested and 75% who are just like, the government's making me be here. But with these programs, I've got like 75 to 95% of girls that really just adore what we're doing, and 1 or 2% that are just like, well, whatever, I was made to come. And we are generally are set up to be portable. I can be in one location or another location. I am around 22 counties. I drive like 500 miles a week. So I started my job a year ago with the Girl Scouts of South Carolina. And these are the companies and organizations that have approached me saying, let's work together and run a program for girls. The American Nuclear Society has their own patch for girls. The Society of Women Engineers calls me and they want to do stuff with me all the time. South Carolina Cyber is a cyber tech firm, and they essentially banged down my door and said, hey, I want to teach cyber technology to girls. Let's do it. We have the STEM Upstate Collaborative that wants to work with us. NASA has worked with us developing space programs for girls. Lockheed Martin and Boeing just pretty much say, hey, I've got this, I want to do this event on this day, which is an after-school program. It's absolutely free. I just need the girls' names so we can do the security background checks to get them on the property. And they got to go hang out in an airplane being built. I mean, like, these people are banging down my doors to work with us, and I get nothing from scientists. That's part of why I wanted to talk specifically about thinking, changing how we thought. And we need to go to these organizations as opposed to trying to individually pick off people in our own ways. So specifically about how kind of the Girl Scouts work, if you want to work with your Girl Scouts, this is actually, I am this person right here, and I chose this particular career because rural girls are especially are hit very, very hard with lower college attendance, higher obesity levels, higher rates of domestic violence, higher levels of disability and chronic illness, and higher levels of substance abuse. So all of these program problems kind of cascade. So these are five rural girls taken in 1995 in July, and we all end up with multiple arrows of things that kind of put us at a disadvantage. And I'm not saying that not everyone has these. It just happens to be much more amplified statistically in rural areas. So women in STEM, especially minority women, are underrepresented in a lot of these careers. And statistically, they study and find out that the negative stereotypes about science and working in scientists actually exist as early as elementary school. The girl with the pink bow, she actually went to, this was her very first LEGO Robotics Engineering Weekend about a month ago, and she walked in the room saying, Legos are for boys. What am I doing here? And by the end of the day, she absolutely adored it. So I have no idea why she got that in her head. Her mom doesn't know either. Her mom's a scientist. She has no idea where she got that from. So it starts, and it just keeps getting reinforced through cultural things. So Girl Scouts is very special in that aspect that it's an all-girls, single-sex environment. So you can take risks and do things that you might not want to do in a mixed environment, because I've seen boys take over a dynamic of the group like that. It happens so quickly. So it's a special environment. And we have a lot of girls who participate in STEM programs, and they become better problem solvers, better leaders, better critical thinkers, get better grades, better scholarships, better careers, and they actually see STEM as a foundation for a meaningful and successful future. So the entire structure of Girl Scouts actually talks about changing the world through to be a better place through what they call take action projects. All of these projects are essentially hands-on, trying to make the world a better place. And I can't think of a better description of what agronomy is. Hands-on, studying to make world a better place. There are 100 different councils nationally, all of which have properties that you can use for sampling if need be. Most of them are okay with it. Some of them may be a little weird. Each of these councils is administered differently. So you may have different administrations and people to talk to, but there's all the availability is there. We also offer financial aid for girls to participate in STEM development. So my council specifically covers almost 10,000 girls. I am essentially the entire western part of South Carolina, i.e. the beautiful part, also the rich half. I know with a 26% children in poverty rate, it doesn't sound like the rich half, but it is. You don't want to know what the other half is. The other half is where the schools were so bad they actually sued the state and won for subpar education. We also have 4,000 adult volunteers, and our counties are split into what's called service units. So they kind of, it's like they break up the group, and then each of these service units have a community development manager on staff. So they have a staff member that works with them that can get out messages and helps them organize together and coalesce as a group. I'm equipped to travel and educate in all of this area and the other area if I want to, because I'm actually based out of the middle here. But, you know, last weekend, or this weekend, I've got a program here. Last weekend, I was down here. And then I was up here the weekend before that. So I can take my stuff in a box to go. I'll pack my shovels in my trunk, and we'll go dig holes. That's half the fun. But as I said, we are all set up that we have a targeted program of catalogs that goes out to every girl. This is called our focal point. Other councils call it different things. But it's a massive book, and you get in this book, we can get people to you. It's essentially an advertising platform that it's the leader Bible. And they will tell you, and you say, oh, I can handle 50 girls for a plant breeding workshop or a plant biology workshop, and I want to do it in at Clemson University on October 15th. And I'll be like, done. Put it in the book, send to print. Generally, we'll have about 40 girls at the events. At that, we generally have about 80% of our maximum capacity. I also have the capability of using online e-blasts and social media posts. A lot of these leaders have been doing Girl Scouts since the dawn of time. And they live, breathe, and diet. And they're dedicated, and they love it, and they will get their girls to things, especially if it's free or near free. And it goes to the entire area that we serve. Most councils have a program team. We have experts in STEM, healthy living, outdoor adventures, leadership, and older girl programs. And that's what I do 9 months of the year. And the other 3 months of the year, I'm a camp director. So I can also do a long-term, week-long intensive study session on any topic that I want to do. Also, camp directors always need curriculum. So if you say, hey, I've got a week's worth of I got a couple hours of activity a day for a week that we can learn about X, I would be like, oh my gosh, thank you. I can even pay you. Thank you so much. We also have outreach programs that we will work with low-income Title I schools, low-income neighborhoods, and we provide to them Girl Scout activities and support. A lot of my STEM programs actually work with these Title I schools. And frequently, these happen to be in South Carolina, at least, happen to be where most of our girls of color happen to go to school. And it's a really, they're a lot of fun. We also have a juvenile justice program. We have people that actually go to prisons and teach people about careers, opportunities, and how to pull life yourself up when you didn't get such a great start because you made a stupid mistake. And we have our Hispanic outreach program that will go in and do some research in Hispanic communities. That's one thing I can't do, even though I speak Spanish. It is not good enough to teach science class Spanish. A lot of studies show that girls, if they're not engaged by the K-3 level, will end up leaving STEM and not really be interested unless you can, like, if you start in middle school, studies say that that's too late to try to start with a lot of these activities. So this is our particular council, and a majority of our girls are actually in that K-3 dynamic, which is what we need people for. So this is what I'm going to do about the problem, or the opportunity, if you will. I'm working on a National Girl Scout agronomy curriculum, and I'm also working with some companies about trying to pilot a soil physics week-long camp for kids, because I'm a nerd like that. I'm using the tech grants that keep coming and banging down my door. I'm actually using them and applying them to agronomy solutions in the real world, because it, to me, it's the most tangible, visible evidence that I can see of a solution. I also frame agronomy as a vehicle to make a difference in the world. I don't say, hey, we're going to go out and study farming. We're going to go out and study the world. We're going to make it better. And I also teach agronomy and soils at summer camps. And there's a ton of people that would love to do it if they just knew what they were doing or had someone to help them. So what exactly can you guys do? Well, if you don't know what you're doing, you can start at the K-12 Soils for Teachers website and the Agronomy Resources website. There's an agronomy page. What is that? Is that agronomy? Something like that. There's an agronomy page, and they have some pretty amazing baselines to just start. You can think introduction to plant or soil science labs. What did you do in college or in school? Base level, something that you can explain to people. Fertilizer trials go really far. If you could say, fertilizer, tall green plant, not fertilizer, half dead. Oh, look, difference. Labs and field research spots are huge. The girls adore going and seeing real live research in action, especially if you hand them a SPAD meter or a chlorophyll meter and be like, go. That's how I got some of my master's research. It was fun. Also leveraging of an outdoor space or offering yourself up as an expert panel. A lot of the Girl Scout curriculum now wants people to talk to scientific experts, if possible, about air quality, environmental science. Offer yourself up as an expert or like someone who's available on Skype. I know people are busy, I know you're busy, but you know, even that 1 hour can really make a difference in someone's career. And then you can start this positive feedback loop. So we can target rural girls for training for high-tech based rural jobs, give tangible skills that they can use in the real world. They can use the training to make a difference in their communities. And I'm talking the high school and middle school level. I have seen, there was a girl who actually had a stroke at the age of 15. And last year she put on a community awareness event on blood pressure and actually ran an entire community health day with screenings and positive changes. So these girls are making a difference now. And if you give them the knowledge, they can make a difference. Like, some of them will work getting food for food banks. One of them, actually, they went and did a community garden at a disabled veterans home, including building and engineering the entire process of the raised beds, and soil is very heavy. And then they went out and taught the veterans curriculum about how to grow the crops, and then they harvested it and taught them how to cook. And she was 14. Like, these are girls that really want to make a difference in the world, and they can. We just have to give a little bit of expertise and a slight smidge in the right direction, and we've got a talented, driven force of girls that can help us in this world. So you need a good scientific foundation to create a population full of innovative entrepreneurs and problem solvers. Partnering with nonprofits can broaden the reach of programs to an audience that actually wants to be there. And we can provide career connections and programming skills to enhance their lives, particularly the rural girls, especially if you work with those of us that do a lot of work in outlying non-city areas. And it can help us fix our pipeline problem. Are there any questions? No? Cool.